You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?
Vices? We don't need no vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
Not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you can find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, basically anywhere you get your podcast. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows like MF Uncensored and the Multiverse Fancast. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul. I almost said Sean. It was bad. And with me in the studio is Sean. Sean, how are you today?
Are you sure I'm here?
I hope so. God damn
it. You look like you're exhausted.
It's been a week.
It's been a week?
It's been a week.
And it's Friday, so the week is over. Yes. For you, at least.
Yeah, for a little bit, yeah. So yeah,
it'll be Monday in no time. So just like,
I'm off on Monday.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, I got off next week. I'm
all
psyched.
All right. Well,
yeah.
I'm glad to be here, Paul.
Well, you were going to zoom in.
I was, because you really never established that I was coming over.
I set everything to default.
Okay.
Yeah, and my brain has literally been scrambled eggs all week.
Gotcha.
But we are also very lucky in that we have a special guest via the Zoom studio. That's the other reason I told Sean he should come over, because three Zooms don't make a right, as they say. And that is our good friend from You Hate to See It, Adam. Adam, how are you today?
I am doing great. Hello, everybody. I'm going to be really awkward for some unknown reason.
That's fine. It's also Sean and Adam's first time meeting.
Yes.
And yeah. Like this is the show. I went on their show to do that. What do we call it?
The Taskmaster special.
The Taskmaster special, where I won, but like no big deal or anything. But I won.
What'd you win?
Bragging rights mostly and embarrassing pictures of people.
There you go.
Yeah. Unfortunately, because there used to be physical prizes that you would have to ship to the winner, and the first episode we one person shipped their prize to the winner, and then the second episode we did, no one shipped their prizes to the winner. And so I said, especially because two of the people I see every single day, I went, what the fuck, guys? Like, now I have to come up with something else, because you're the two people that, like, at least if you two would do it, I'd still do physical prizes, but you're not even fucking doing it. So I made people embarrass themselves. But if it ever happens to be done in person, ever, we're going back to physical prizes.
There,
because
you go.
Those are way more fun.
Yeah, but that was a great. Is that a thing, the episode on your website or anything like that? Like,
So Taskmaster is exclusively on Patreon. Mm-hmm. It live streams for free. And then you to watch it back or to watch it for the first time later, you have to become a patron. But you only need to subscribe for $1 a month, and you can watch all of our Taskmaster specials.
So it's even funnier was Ronnie was supposed to be on it, and he bailed at the last minute because he's a terrible person. So
you, Ronnie, and I'm blanked. Rob. It was supposed to be Misfit Faction and You Hate to See It, exclusively just the two podcasts.
And then
Rob, I haven't met you yet, Sean.
Oh, no. Yeah. I was like, but, yeah.
That,
but
it was Rob, arranged through Steve.
Ah.
Yeah. See, Sean?
and Rob, like 2 months before, texted me and backed out. I was like, all right, went and found someone else to take his place. And then created all of the graphics. Like, I sat there. I spent 2 weeks making just everything. And then, like, 4 days before, Ronnie goes, I don't think I'll be able to make it. And I'm not going to, re-edit everything. So I just made a new video of the SpongeBob, like, ba ba la ba 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 la ba 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 ba. And I did, unfortunately, Ronnie's not able to make it, and I like had pre-recorded this. It's like, Ronnie can't be here, and I put his picture up on
the
screen.
It was the best thing
with
ever.
A big red cross through it, like, because he sucks. But we have a new person, and just I had the actual sound, and the person I had last minute gotten to replace him was the husband of one of the people already on the show, and it was took a long time to get through that, but it was fun.
But the best is Ronnie finished whatever he was doing at the time, and no, he didn't. He started watching it live.
Yeah.
So we started ripping on him while he was watching it. I was like texting him because, like, so for those of you guys who aren't aware, Taskmaster was basically, here's a task that you have to do in an allotted time, and it was, you know, a lot of different categories, things like how many animals you can look up. But I still remember the worst one, or the most fun one, was we had to make a drink out of like 15 ingredients in your house, like any sort of alcoholic beverage. So Melanie's like, there's sprinkles upstairs. Like, Melanie's yelling to me from upstairs as she's also
texting into our thing too, like on Facebook, like commenting, like, I'm telling him to do this.
Yeah.
Like,
oh my God. So I ended up making this disgusting drink, and Melanie goes, oh, they're going to make you drink that. I was like, he wouldn't do that 4 minutes later. So now you have to take a sip. I was like, damn it.
So, yeah. So I do. So a lot of times, so Taskmaster is based off of an actual TV show called Taskmaster. I love that show. Wanted to start when they went to, when COVID hit, they released like their own thing that you could buy the rights to and do Taskmaster at home and do like party night with a Taskmaster thing. I bought it. It was great. That was our first one that we did. And I was like, I'm doing this every year. And so, yeah, I watch every episode. There's even foreign versions. So I will Google, like, I look up all of the tasks that they actually do on the show. I pull up, like, what do I think we could do over Zoom? Pull those. And then I sit there. They have four books of tasks that I sit there and I read through the books, come up with tasks. I look at Impractical Jokers and try and find bits from Impractical Jokers for tasks. And then I'll like write my own or find inspiration and edit things my own. And yeah, and a lot of times, 80% of what I'm doing is meant to royally fuck people up and fuck people over. And it's a great time for me. And yeah,
I was the like, host who does, who just watches. Yeah.
It's all about, well, I get very drunk, but it's all about being vague enough to cause chaos. So like, I don't know, the one task was come dressed as someone who solves mysteries.
Yep.
And like a lot of Batman.
There's a lot of Batman.
For some reason, in my head, I was thinking Scooby-Doo, and no one dressed up as any Scooby-Doo character. But like, there was one thing that it was a task that I was going to send out to people. This was our second year. And I ended up having to record it as opposed to sending it out because it involved rapping. But I didn't want it. It's rap. I tried to be vague enough that it could be physically rapping or verbally rapping. And I was like, if I send it out in a letter, it becomes like, I know what I want, but I don't know what people are going to give me. So I'm like, if I send it out as a letter, I'm going to get whatever spelling I decide to use. I was like, at least I can be ambiguous enough that maybe someone will come in and throw down some sick beats for my ears. Like, who knows?
It was a good time. And again, I won. So there's that. But now that we've successfully introed everything but the show, and who cares? There's no news today. We're keeping news to a minimum because now we're in that weird time where March is, at the time of recording, March is over. Most of the big films have come out. I definitely think there's going to be a Super Mario episode in our future.
Yes.
Because that movie's coming out. They still have not lifted the review embargo yet, and I'm really excited to see what the reviews say about it.
Yeah. We got 3 weeks between now and our May the 4th.
Star Wars month. Oh, Star Wars month. My God. But so Adam also...
That sounds rough.
You know what? It's funny because the first time we did Star Wars month wasn't that bad. Like, we did the original trilogy and I think we did Fanboys.
Yes.
Then the following year, we did the prequel trilogy. And what was the fourth one that we did?
It's a very good question. I'm blanking on
Clone Wars?
No, not
Clone Wars movie?
No, I don't think it was Clone Wars. I don't know. We'll have to look back.
Was it Solo?
No, we haven't done Solo yet. Or Rogue One. And then,
so you might have a good Star Wars month this year.
No, because we're talking about the sequel trilogy.
There's only one good one.
And that, even that's stretching it a little bit.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm excited.
Well, we got to do it. You know, it's the last one.
I mean, it's gonna be better than Star Wars Month next year when you have to talk about these trash TV shows, unless you just do Mandalorian for 4 weeks.
Yeah, but I'll spoiler alert, Mandalorian this season is not holding me that much.
Really? Yeah. I still haven't finished Andor because I'm struggling. It's too boring.
But... Well, the thing about the Mandalorian this year is there's not a lot of direction. Like, at least last season, it was like, all right, Mando, here's your main quest, and then you got a bunch of side quests that you got to do on the way. It's like watching The Witcher. All right, cool. This one, the main quest is not really there yet, but who knows? I think it's only halfway done. All right, speaking of halfway done, last week we did part one of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, and this week, finally, we are finally there. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows part deux.
Part deux?
Part deux. Yeah, that's the French version.
Yes.
So we'll do initial thoughts first, and then we're not going to do too many new characters because there weren't that many. We're going to really kind of look at the whole series, the things that we liked about this movie, things that were different for this movie, and that's pretty much going to be it. So Sean, initial thoughts on Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
So I rewatched this movie yesterday for the first time in probably a while, and it never hit me before, but I compare it to Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame.
All right.
Where Infinity War and Deathly Hallows Part 1 are good movies, and then the second one, Endgame, and this one start off well, but kind of just...
They lose you in the middle?
Lose a little in the middle and then kind of gain you back at the end, but it's a little over the top too much and just not as good as the previous one.
All right. Adam, initial thoughts on Deathly Hallows Part 2?
This is my second favorite Harry Potter movie. I do somewhat agree with you, Sean, but I feel like it starts off okay and then kind of starts to lose you, and that's just the big grand thing is because in a movie like this there is no second act.
Mm-hmm.
Like the second act is very weak because like the book is like the first three quarters of the first movie is act one, and then it ends on the turn. And which is like during the second act, you have the turn.
Yeah.
And that's where that's where you just end, especially when you're adapting a book. Like at least Avengers Endgame, like it still was a complete story on its own. But like this, like you're ending at the turn, and then you have to, all you get is the fall of act two leading into act three.
Right.
And that's all this movie is there is no middle act. It's just a fall until you get into the third act.
Yeah, I agree. You this movie, it's not the book split in half. It's like you said, like the first one is a lot of the book. Like it is a surprising amount. And I would imagine, I really want to see this movie back to back with each other, like the part one into part two. And
that's
see,
the only way I watch it.
Yeah, I just don't know if I could sit down for... That's like a five-hour adventure.
I mean, you probably sat down for the Snyder Cut. I bet you can do this.
All right, let's calm down now. All right, let's not get... That's a multiverse fan cast discussion. Thank you very much. But I do... So this movie, I think, definitely starts off... It starts off with a nice action set piece with the whole getting into Gringotts. But then it starts to taper, and it's really just building to this big, gigantic climax. There's some hits, there's some misses. Overall, despite any qualms I may have, this is a solid ending. Like they did a great job. There are some creative choices that we'll get into, but for me, like it's solid. It's a solid film, and it ends the trilogy the right way, or the series.
Yeah, if I was to like, this is my second favorite one, but that's on my list of. Like, the Harry Potter franchise is one of those that I fully have to be like, the books and movies are separate because there's so many differences between the two after the second movie that you can't look at them. They're not no longer apples and apples. It's rough. So looking at this, like, if I was to then rank them with the books of, like the best adaption and stuff, like this would not be very high up there. Like, but if I was to be like, oh, just as a movie going fan, this is great. As a fan of the books, because Harry Potter was like everyone my age was my entire personality throughout middle school. It was rough.
So that's an interesting question. I was going to bring this up too. Do you think that you have to be a Harry Potter fan to fully enjoy these films, or can you be completely out of the Harry Potter book world and sit down and watch these films? What do you think, Sean?
Okay, so I guess the way I have to respond to that, so you're saying never read the books.
Never read a book. Never read a single book.
Just sat down to watch the first Harry Potter and was like, oh, this is good. Let me just continue watching it.
Right.
Yeah, I think you could. I think the story is compelling enough that you want to see where these characters go with no backstory. I would assume if the person watching the movie is an avid reader and they've never read it before, they're going to go and read the books after seeing probably at least the first movie or two.
Well, that was me. I think we talked about it in the first episode that I didn't read the book first. I saw the first movie, and then I went back and I was like, well, now I have to read.
Yeah, no, me
too. So that's how I was for probably a different reason than what you were. I was 5 when the first movie came out, so I was not old enough to really understand or read those books. So the sixth movie is my least favorite, strictly because that is the first movie I saw after the book.
Oh, I like it. Okay. Makes sense.
So I like, because just where my the movies were and the books were coming out with, and for me in my age, that's how, like, I was seeing those movies opening day, but it wasn't until the sixth movie where I was at, like, more of the reading level that I could start reading all those books first. Yeah.
I think that the biggest, like, downfall of this film is in the book, a lot of things call back to earlier in the series. J.K. Rowling does a very good job of being like, oh, this thing, this random thing in Chamber of Secrets is totally relevant here. Like, it always was supposed to be. Especially, like, with the ghosts. Like, we see Ravenclaw's ghost, but, like, we hadn't seen a ghost since, like, the second movie.
Pretty much.
So it's just the best example that I can think of off the top of my head.
The basilisk kind of in Chamber of the Secrets. Really,
yeah, that kind of thing really, that, like, that's when my comparing the movies to the books to form a ranking system or whatever, that's when this movie really falls, is both part one and part two rely heavily on things that were super important earlier on that they didn't introduce because for obvious reasons, like, they didn't know they were going to be important. These small little details that were meant to be throwaway lines and at the beginning are now extremely important. Like Sirius's mirror, which is supposed to be handheld mirror, that all of a sudden Harry just has a shard of mirror that they never explained why he has a shard of mirror. And then it's not the same type of mirror. It makes zero sense why it happens. And they just shoehorned a bullshit explanation into the movie, which, if you're not a Harry Potter fan, that's fine, you can get behind that vaguely, but as someone who's read the books, that pisses me off to no end. Like, it was literally like, he gives it to Harry, he opens it up, gets pissed off, throws it, it shatters, and then never cleans out his trunk for 4 years until he has to clean it out and says, oh shit, there's that mirror that is in there, and now shit's happening. Like,
that is a perfect example of when you sit with somebody who asks you what's going on in a film or asks you to explain it, and you're like, oh, that, if you read the book, you're like, it was this thing, and then they're like, what movie was that in? And you just kind of go, about that,
it was not
in
there
fact.
Is no because they didn't, no one, this is stuff that I wish, because J.K. Rowling had most of this shit planned out. I wish she would have told them certain things are going, even if she didn't have the final things finished yet, she should have been like, hey, this little thing that you're planning on cutting out is actually really important. You should probably show it.
Yeah.
Like, just for that reason.
Well, supposedly she told Alan Rickman very early on that, like, what Snape's real motivations were, and so he could play it that way.
I love that he was able to play that up starting in the first, like, it was like before they even shot, he just met with her and was like, I want to know why I'm an asshole to an 11-year-old.
Why am I picking on this child so much?
Yeah, like, why am I a complete dick to an 11-year-old for no reason? And she didn't want to tell him. He, like, forced her to tell him.
Yeah, and then you look back, like, the first scene where Snape is looking at Harry in Sorcerer's Stone, and it adds context to that look that he's looking this kid in the eye, and it's his mom's eyes.
I feel like in all, like, every time you see Snape watching the movies back after knowing what's happening, you see, like, love in Alan Rickman's eyes when he looks at this kid and then treats him like shit. And it's always this weird thing. Like, I look at it and I go, it looks like he's, like, about to cry every time he looks at Harry and then treats him like absolute shit. And, like, it's so, like, I watched that now and I'm like, oh, this is amazing. Like, I'm so glad that
Alan Rickman knew. Yeah.
That was one of the few things that we had the thought to, or had the ability to think ahead on and plan out.
This was one of the things where it's like, I felt like Alan Rickman deserved an Oscar nom for just the culmination of all the movies. Like, not just for his performance in this one, even though there are some great moments in this one with him. Culmination. I mean, you take a character that no one knew until the final book was truly what he was doing, and now going looking back, as Adam says, it's you watch his performance, and it's just it's wonderful.
A good sequel, whether it's a book or a movie, should always inspire you to rewatch the previous film in some sort of new capacity, right? Like, we love the Marvel movies. I like the DC movies. Relax. But, like, they're
so do I. I just like the shit on you.
But there are very few Marvel or DC movies that make me want to turn around and go backwards to get a new sense of what I just watched. And the Harry Potter franchise, with all of its faults or whatever, you know, it does a great job at making you want to reread the books with new eyes or rewatch the movies and be like, wow, it's totally different.
Because, I mean, looking back on, you know, Sorcerer's Stone, the Quidditch game, where Snape is literally, you know, saving his life by using the counter curse.
And you see Quirrell in the background.
We all just were like, oh, well, okay, you know, maybe, like, he's just a debt to, you know, to the mother or the father at some point. Who knows? But he truly still doesn't like him. Prisoner of Azkaban. He literally puts himself in between the kids and Remus Lupin.
I still say that's one of my favorite scenes.
It's a great scene, but even then,
I mean, that's my favorite movie and book.
Thank you.
Shut up.
Prisoner of Azkaban is perfection in any format you decide to
use. Did we just become
best
friends?
Thank you. I was the only one that was like, everybody else is like...
Well, you guys ruined my end of the episode question of do the books and movies line up in order? And now I know both your favorites. So.
No, they don't.
Well, they don't.
Just that one.
Just that
my
one.
My number one is number one across the board. Yeah. Everything else is different.
I mean, him killing Dumbledore, we talked about it in our episode on Half-Blood Prince. I mean, you could see it on his face. There's no malice in his face. He is literally
torn apart
by this.
Yeah.
The fact that no one else sees that, like, you would think Bellatrix going like...
No, they're all standing behind him.
I know, but it's like...
They just see his hair.
And then the opening scene of this with the Dementors hovering around Hogwarts, and he's just standing like in the clock tower looking down, and even he's like, what have I done?
Yeah. Or let's even, like, another one that I never noticed until somebody pointed it out. When Harry meets Professor Quirrell, he goes to shake his hand, and Quirrell doesn't shake his hand.
Yeah.
Because, mostly because it was playing up the part.
Him.
And then, he never touches him. So, like, things like that are just really cool, and I think that this series as a whole does a very good job.
Yeah.
So with that, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk some of the differences between the films and then kind of our overall ranking of this series as a whole. But first, quick break. Hey guys, it's Paul, and the Misfit Faction is looking for your help. We are trying to grow not only our network, but also grow our brands. And the best way to do that is if you guys are looking to start your very own podcast. Maybe you guys have been listening to us for a while. Maybe it's something you guys have always wanted to do, but you're not sure how to get started. If you go to podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys will get a month of free podcasting on set as a gift from us. So make sure if you guys are looking to start your own show, you reach out to us and go to podbean.com/misfitfaction. Also, maybe you guys have your own online business or service. You're always looking to grow, and advertising is a very big part of that. If you guys go to sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys can get $100 worth of free advertising, again, as a thank you from us to you guys. That's sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction. All right, we are back, and we are here to talk some of the differences between the film and the book. We're going to talk some favorite scenes, and of course, we're going to talk about the series as a whole. Sean, do you want to do differences first or favorite scenes first?
Let's do favorite scenes first.
You want to do favorite scenes? Yeah. Do you have a favorite scene that
jumps
to mind? All right, you get to go first.
So I have two.
You get to do one.
I get to do one?
And then we'll go around.
It's Harry putting Snape's tears in the pensive and him seeing the flashback of everything Snape has done for him, basically. Yeah, to me, that is Alan Rickman's just brilliant. And I thought that the aging process actually did pretty good for him.
Yeah, they do
they
a good,
a good job.
Job
with him.
I think it's because the pensive scene looks already so ethereal that your mind doesn't uncanny valley that too much.
But it's
they change his hair too, because in 7 and 8 they gave him longer hair, and so during the flashbacks they didn't have to. He hadn't aged a whole lot. In those movies, so
just
they
a little
were
makeup,
able to kind of
yeah.
little makeup, maybe a couple prosthetics here and there, some tape to pull things back, and then give him his short hair again. And
easy enough.
Yeah, I love the scenes between him and Dumbledore where he's like pleading with Dumbledore, protect them. I mean, it's a theater. He's like, why are you coming to me? He goes, I don't want her to die.
Right.
And Dumbledore's a dick.
Yeah, looking back on this entire series, Dumbledore's like a terrible person.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it's...
But I think he truly... I think... I want to say he's a terrible person, but I really do believe that Harry makes him a better person. Like, if that makes sense. Like, I think he feels guilt for what happened to, you know, Lily and James. And so, you know, obviously he couldn't protect Harry from... He had to send him to the Dursleys. And he truly, like, cares for the kid. But he knows the kid is destined to die. Like, that's the thing.
I think personally, like, it makes you rethink, does Dumbledore want to stop Voldemort because he's an altruistic person who wants to, you know, save lives, or because he doesn't like the competition for assholes? Speaking of which, But what about you, Adam? Favorite scene?
Well, I mean, to not just say the end battle, which is amazing, but I really like kind of the I would call it a scene and a half, the in the forest leading into that final kind of speaking confrontation in the courtyard. Like right before the battle starts, that whole like I'm going to the forest and into the courtyard scene. That whole thing is just amazing. Like Hagrid's like having a mental breakdown when Harry shows up, and then them forcing Hagrid to carry Harry into the courtyard.
Yeah. That's
and
rough.
Then the fucking like Neville stepping up to, because for anyone who doesn't read the books, Neville was very close to becoming the Chosen One.
Right. They don't even like, bring that up in the movies.
No.
Yeah. So Neville was born on, so Harry's born July 31st, same birthday that tattoo's for. And Neville's born July 29th.
Mm-hmm.
And they both fit into the prophecy. So, and Voldemort just happened to pick Harry first to try and kill. So Neville finally growing up, taking the stands, gaining a voice, and showing the fact that he can be the Chosen One, and taking that role from Harry in that moment, and bringing everyone together, not really being the reason, really helping with the reason of Draco switching sides.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, the entire Malfoy family moving onto the side of Hogwarts, like
they ran away.
Okay, so the Malfoys ran away. It started though with Draco, though. Like Draco fully switched sides, and then the Malfoys went in there and got him and ran away. But like, because Draco went in, tosses his wands to Harry, like goes in to do something, and then
that's it.
Backs out, but still, like, oh. I feel like that whole sequence is just super powerful, and knowing that was something that wasn't in the books that gets added to the movies in a really impactful way.
Yeah. One of my favorite scenes is the scene of Limbo when Harry dies.
With Dumbledore?
It's exactly how I imagine in the books. It's that conversation, and I love how it's still super ambiguous at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, am I really dead, or is this happening in my head? Or is this real, or is it happening in my head? And he goes, well, of course it's happening in your head. But does that make it any less real? That scene always just sticks out to me when I think of this movie, because like it's exactly how I imagined it in the books.
For that scene, when I picture it in my head when I was reading the book, I pictured it with Richard Harris, not Michael Gambon.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Because I feel like that scene is a Richard Harris Dumbledore type of scene. Mm-hmm. It is Michael Gambon, which I am perfectly fine. Like, I had no issues picturing Michael Gambon as Dumbledore when I was reading the books through really anything else. Even like reading the first and second books, being like, yeah, I could see Michael Gambon doing this kind of stuff. Between that, the limbo scene, and the did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire scene? Those are scenes that I'm like, that those are Richard Harris. Those were made for Richard Harris.
Yeah. Sean, you said you had another favorite scene?
Yeah, I love the... Wow, just blanking. Sorry, give me a second.
Is it not my daughter, you bitch? Because that's one of the greatest lines in cinematic history.
That was the
history.
Only time in the entire theater we saw, I think, I don't know if I saw it with you, but...
Probably. No, we did.
It was
one
of the early showings. When she drops that line, the entire theater exploded.
I was in a theater when I first saw it. Thankfully, that was on par with Avengers Endgame.
That moment was definitely up there, yeah.
The whole part two movie was just everything. People are freaking out. You're hearing sobbing. Like, it was great experience.
did you think of it yet?
Yeah, sorry. I do enjoy when Harry confronts Snape in the Grey Hall.
Oh, the how dare you, so, stand,
oh,
stand,
how dare you stand where crazy. He stood. And again, I don't think McGonagall knew anything about Snape.
Right.
But because you see Snape's reaction when she goes to
attack him.
He's like, oh, I don't want to do this.
And he deflects the spell.
He deflects it, but then he also disarms the two ones behind him.
He uses her spells to knock them out. It's really cool.
And he truly looks hurt, thinking like, because I feel like they probably in the background had a decent relationship until this all was really coming about when they didn't think he was a Death Eater or believing that he had moved on from that part of his life. I feel like they had a decent relationship, and then he's truly hurt because he knows that she has no idea what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just the fact that he's lost a friend in this is...
Yeah.
I mean,
also that Great Hall seems so much smaller in that scene than it does in any of the other movies.
Yeah it's because it's because they're older.
Well, they're not filming at Oxford anymore.
And also, but I would also argue that it's because they don't have these long grand tables that all these children are sitting
at.
That's
true.
It's all of them really just bunched together.
I think it was the lens choice too, because I feel like a lot of times in those Great Hall scenes, unless it's close-ups, you're using what I can't remember what type of lens it would be, but you're causing, like, you're really making things far away seem further away. The type of lens, the depth perception on those lenses make it look longer, where in that it's such a small intimate interaction that you then want to use a lens that brings the background into the foreground.
Right.
And it just causes a weird thing for... I've actually been there. I did the Harry Potter studio tour, so I've actually been on that set. Nice. And it is quite small, actually.
So any other favorite scenes, though? I know, Sean, you just... Adam, did you have another favorite scene that you wanted to discuss really quick?
I mean, even though it's literally nothing like the books, and I hate myself for liking it, the final showdown.
Oh, I'm gonna argue it. I'm gonna argue it with you so much.
Wait, the epilogue or
the final showdown. The final fight.
The showdown.
The showdown. It's so, as a film lover, it is so cool. As someone who's read the books, it is horrendous, but I love it.
Yeah. So I read the books, obviously, and I have a lot of qualms with the ending. There was
same. I hate most of the ending.
So let's talk. We'll kind of dive into some of the differences between the books. I think the final battle is the biggest, because literally this movie is the Gringotts robbery and then Battle of Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Like that is the movie. There's no in between. There's no they're still looking for the Horcruxes during all this, but they change a lot in this ending battle. And some of it just doesn't make sense, and some of it's very strange. But let's start with Harry and Voldemort. So I find it very strange in any capacity when people who are super into magic and magic superiority start slapping each other. At one point, Voldemort starts backhanding Harry. It is the most, one of the most jarring scenes, because like literally he's like magic and then he's just like whack, smacks Harry in the face. I'm like, wait, what?
I mean, I feel like that's like in close quarters. But like when you're in close quarters, like it's very difficult to like, how great is sword fighting and like when you're fucking chest to chest? Like,
yeah, but
it's
I wouldn't start punching somebody.
I mean, that's also just me. I played hockey, so I would just start punching somebody.
For Voldemort, I would never see him resorting to such a quote unquote muggle tactic. Like to see him smacking someone, it just they do a lot of things with Voldemort in the movies that just don't feel the hug is so cringy when he hugs Malfoy.
Like that was improvised.
Yes, and it was funny. Like don't get me wrong, the first time we saw it, we all laughed. But then I watched it again. I was like, oh, that's rough. Like.
It's so uncomfortable, yeah. But I love it because I feel like in the books you get to hear what people are thinking. In the movies you don't, unless right. people speak it or you have a narrator. And so to Gotta do imagine. That you have to show some kind of action to yeah. what people are thinking. And I feel like that was just so awkward and uncomfortable. And showing how delusional Voldemort is.
Yeah. And the thing about Harry and Voldemort is in the books, their fight is not epic at all.
Oh, no.
It is. And but that's the point from a literary standpoint. It's to show that that Voldemort dies a very human death. Like, everything he did to become immortal and all-powerful, he just kind of, like, falls down. And that's
that. He gets slammed into a wall, cracks the back of his head open, and is dead.
Yeah.
Such a fucking muggle death. And as a really fuck you, as you think you're better than muggles, like, and then you die like a muggle. Like,
yeah, there's some weird things though. Like when, like, I get it. They want to make it more cinematic. They want a little bit more show. I mm-hmm. get it. I can get behind it. But like I said, him smacking him and then him, when they fall over the crevice and they disapparate together. Mm-hmm. And there's that one shot where like their faces merge. Like I get what they were trying to do, but I'm still like, I don't like it at all.
As a film person, like, yeah, it's two sides of the same coin.
I
a lot of that final battle, once they, like, there's certain moments that bother me, but I feel like the final battle is pretty cool. And I don't mind how it played out. You're giving it more action for a film audience, but I do wish his death wouldn't have been an Avengers Endgame death.
Thanos is away.
That. I was like,
he just dusts away. Like he.
Well, they copied Harry Potter. Let's just establish that.
Yeah,
Harry Potter didn't even copy Harry Potter in that case.
I'm just saying, like, you know.
But yeah, I feel like that should have been. They should have just changed like positions and had him fly into like the Great Hall, into that entryway. Or something, and die that way. Leave it more ambiguous as to did the spell kill him, or did the fucking crap
getting rocked
hit him? Like,
We also have Teddy Lupin is not named or mentioned or seen in this film.
He's mentioned.
I think he's mentioned.
Is he mentioned
when Harry dies? Because, and he's like your son.
Oh, well, yeah,
goes,
that part. But yeah, like
yeah,
at the end
know,
though,
you
afterwards,
name, you don't know anything.
You never. I don't, oh, do we ever see him?
Yeah.
No, I don't think we ever.
No, we never. Oh, I think
he's supposed to be one of the kids in the epilogue.
I think we see him,
you don't
but
know which one.
Like he's just a background character that they gave a name to. Like,
yeah, it's still weird.
Because I think he's in the carriage with the kids when they're going away.
Yeah.
But the focus is on the big three. So you're like, who gives a shit about that? Let's focus on the people we care about.
Speaking of people we care about, Ron and Hermione have a very, very different first kiss than the books. Like it is, they mention in the books them going down to the Chamber of Secrets, but in the film they decided to show it. They decided to show him stabbing the Horcrux, and that's when they have their first kiss. Because they didn't mention Spew or Hermione's love of house elves and like wanting them to be treated as equals in any of the movies, it made more sense. That was one of the few things that I was like, you don't really have a choice. It would be really weird if Hermione was like, save the house elves, or Ron was like, save the house elves, and Hermione kissed them in this.
I was okay with that because, and again, on the hindsight of Spew, didn't really matter.
Right.
Like, in the whole big scheme of things, like, that was a plot point that you can get rid of, and I feel like what they did in the movie was more impactful than what it was in the books. And I feel like it worked.
We also had Harry and Ginny have their relationships very different in the books and in the movies.
Again, can we just establish that whole...
It just sucks.
On screen, that relationship is just weird.
It did not translate well at
it
all.
Did, so, because they didn't give it any time. I mean, that... So, I do know... They were... The producers were pushing to make four... like, every movie starting with four, a two-parter. Like,
man, that would have been a lot.
And because four is so huge and it involves a lot of the Ginny stuff, and then that kind of keeps going forward as a side plot throughout. And I feel like that was one of those plot points that, as they kept going, they tried to like put it away and be like, ah, because it wasn't important. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, fuck, it is important.
Man, we got to go,
like,
back and
we need to start
retcon all this.
Like, starting in the sixth movie, the seventh book was already out. So they're like, oh, fuck, like, this is extremely important. We have to shoehorn this in now because, rightfully so, we cut it out because it didn't matter earlier on. Like, I'm very against anyone adapting books to movies that the series isn't done yet.
That's fair.
Because
And then the last difference, and this gave, I had an audible groan.
I was so annoyed at it. I remember that. You were just like,
Harry
what?
Snapping the Elder Wand in
oh
half.
Oh my god. I'm pissed.
Yeah, it is
fucking,
it is one of the worst. Like, I get what they were trying to convey, that Harry's like, I don't need this. I don't need to be all powerful.
They conveyed to the books that he doesn't need it either.
It was
that
so
he just
much
wants
better.
His wand.
It was so much better in the book.
He just wants his regular wand back. So he fixes his wand with the Elder Wand and then puts the wand in its final resting place. What the fuck is wrong with that?
And
why
the fact
can't
that
we do that?
The most powerful wand in existence, and it's just like, all right, like,
yeah, I like do, at least like leave him for a plot point later on. Like,
I do like his story. I do like his reaction when Ron's like, so you have it? He goes, yeah,
it's mine. Yeah, it is a very funny reaction, I'll give you that.
But yeah, I remember when he snapped that thing, you let out just like, what?
Oh my gosh.
What's funnier than that reaction is when they all have to stand next to each other, but they can't because Daniel Radcliffe is 4'3" and fucking
Rupert Grint
is,
like,
is
6'12"
and they have to like stagger themselves shoot bust shots so that way they look like they're all even.
Yeah, but those are the biggest differences, or at least the ones that stick out.
The Crab and Goyle stuff,
yeah, but that was only because the guy who played one of them got arrested, and they had
he got arrested for growing weed and having an extreme amount of weed.
Yeah.
And so they replaced him with Blaze,
yeah,
which was already in the movies. Like, he was just a side character in the movies anyway.
Yeah, Blaze Sabini.
I feel like, especially because the characters in the part one, you could have recast.
Yeah, nobody would have noticed. Nobody would have cared at that point.
You find someone who looks close enough and you're fine. Just make some comments about, like, hey, Crab.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Crab and Goyle.
Does the one of them die in the book? I can't remember.
Yeah, the fiend kills them.
Yeah. Both of them?
I think. No, just one of them.
No,
the one same. Who cast it.
Yeah, so the same as it.
Yeah, it was like, it just so worked out that I think Goyle is the one who was in the movie.
Okay.
And I think it works out that Goyle is the one who also dies in the book.
Yeah.
Right.
So it just happened to work out in their favor that the person who dies is the person that you still have. But
yeah.
All right, so we're going to wrap it up because we are pushing time.
Can I just say one thing? I actually got to see Cursed Child a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's starts off basically exactly where this movie leaves off. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the epilogue?
I think the makeup work needed a lot of work. And
that's a reshot.
Yeah, that is.
Can you only imagine what the original looked like?
I'm terrified. And you know, it's just
hard
jarring.
To take a 18-year-old and make them look like they're 39.
Yeah,
it's extremely difficult,
especially back then.
Back then, it's because
what
like,
was that? 10 years ago?
More. 2012. So 12 years ago. Yeah. I watched it yesterday, and I'm like, okay, Daniel Radcliffe honestly doesn't look much different than he did back then.
No.
Yeah, Emma Watson does not look much different.
Oh,
you know,
thank God.
Tom Felton looks a little different, but they like gave him a little bit of a fat suit and all that stuff.
They gave Rupert Grint too a fat suit.
They gave Rupert Grint a fat
suit.
That
was from the books too.
But yeah, but for anyone out there who has not seen it, go see Cursed Child if you can. It is an absolute treat to see it on Broadway. It is.
I've read it.
It's yeah. So it's an exact. It starts off exactly where the movie where the book leads off. It's about. You know, Albus Severus and Malfoy's son, Scorpius, is a great... But you have to see it on the stage because it's one of... Yeah. It's like Lion King. It's just so well done. Mm-hmm. I hope they don't make it into a movie. I don't think it'll translate well into a movie.
I don't think I'll ever be able to see it on stage. So... Because I don't think it's come to Chicago yet.
Oh, really? Oh,
not yet.
I'm like, the chances that I get to see it in theaters before I can see it on stage are high at this point. Yeah. So,
all right. So here's how we're going to finish it up, because we're going to skip Fan Feedback Friday this week just because I don't know how long our Star City rating is going to take. We're going to do a Star City rating on this film and then just final thoughts on the series as a whole. We've already ranked the movies, but just a Star City rating on this film. And then I guess a Star City rating for the franchise as a whole. I'll go first, just so you guys have time to collect your thoughts. This movie I give a 4. This is well above average. It is fantastically done. Again, I have my qualms, but that's also just because I'm a book nerd with this stuff. But it's still a good time. It's satisfying in the right ways. It hits the biggest notes that people wanted. And some of the creative changes were actually for the better, I'll say it. As a whole, this franchise, I give a 4. It is just, it's not perfect. And we've, you know, for 8 weeks, we have picked apart these movies and we found little things that bother us. And unfortunately for me, those little things added up. And I was like, I can't give this a perfect score because, you know, I don't feel that. But again, it is so rare for a franchise to have almost no misfires in terms of overall quality of each film. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as we love our Marvels and our DCs, and even like the Fast and the Furious, there are plenty of films in those franchises that were just kind of like, meh. So that's where I stand. Fight me. Sean, go.
I was going to say, like, you can let Adam can go.
Adam, you can go.
I agree that this movie's a 4. I hadn't read the books, I'd probably say it was a 5. Like, right. That's kind of where I'm at, is I know it's supposed to happen, I know it's supposed to be there, and I know it's not. So that would be the only reason why I would drop it down to a 4. The franchise, the 3.5, 3.75, like somewhere in there, only talking about Harry Potter, because once we get into Fantastic Beasts, that's a whole other fucking bullshit.
We're not there. We can't.
It's a lot, but yeah. You know, so I would give it that. I mean, a lot of really great moments for me, a lot of moments that defines my childhood. But yeah.
Shawnee?
All right, so I'm going to give this movie a 4. It is a solid ending to a series that we all were anticipating for years. I remember seeing it in theaters and just going, I am happy with how this ended. You know, agree with you. There are certain things where you're just like, okay, why'd they do that? A few scenes where I'm kind of like, okay, you know, I thought the death of Voldemort was a little
over the top.
You know, the Bellatrix Lestrange death was a little too, I was like, yeah, suffer a little more, will you? Like, you know, it's just,
okay.
I don't know.
Be more human. They've
I
like,
didn't like the
made
blowing
it
her
way
up.
Too much.
Yeah, yeah. I would have liked to have just seen her just like, you know, do to her what she did to the freaking Longbottom. Something, you know, I'm all for revenge.
You gotta mean them.
You gotta mean it. Series as a whole, I am going to give this between a 4 and a 4.5.
Wow, high praise.
Yes. Okay, so this series did something that was very difficult. It took an absolute phenomenon of a book series, and and brought it to the cinematic world in a way that, as we've said numerous times, I don't have a single issue with any casting decision they've made in any of the 8 movies.
They nailed it.
whoever was the casting director for the first movie and then for subsequent movies after that should be awarded, because, I mean, they just found perfect people everywhere. The fact that you got them all to literally stay with the series throughout, you know, minus obviously Richard Harris because he passed away, that is, you know, fantastic on its own. I mean, you get these classically trained actors to come back for a 5-second cameo. I mean, you know, God bless. The production design, the cinematography, the music is, it's arguably one of the most iconic scores in movie history now with the Harry Potter theme with John Williams. So there's so much more that I think adds to these movies than just its adaptations of a book that's given us that stuff. But I love all of them. I think it's a great series and just a lot of fun.
Well, that is a lovely note for us to wrap up on. That was very nice. That was the nicest thing I've ever heard you say.
That's not true.
It's up there.
Well, because I've never said anything nice about you. So.
That's what I was aiming for. Thanks for hitting that on the mark. So really quick, guys, don't forget, on our website, themisfitfaction.com, you'll find all of our brand new news, reviews, articles, and other shows. You can also find us on all the social medias like Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Ronnie's Mom's Diary. You'll definitely find us all over. And for Adam, tell everybody a little bit about your show really quick. You got
to
plug your
show. I'm a co-host of a show called You Hate to See It. It's me and my two best friends. We get drunk. We sometimes have people on and we bullshit most of the time, sometimes interview people and sometimes talk about serial killers. It's a great time. And
there it is. That's it.
Yeah. It's a great time. We're on the same website as on the Misfit Faction website. Yep. We're available wherever you listen to podcasts, and we have a Patreon, and please subscribe to our Patreon because I don't like working.
I want to do this for money.
Yeah.
But if you guys are also interested, we did interview Adam and his crew on our show, MF Uncensored, and they had us on their show. So look for those episodes. They were a lot of fun. I think there's going to be a repeat of appearance of us on their show in the near future. So keep an eye out for that. Adam, thank you again for joining us. This was a lot of fun.
I do my best.
And as always, I'm Paul.
I'm Sean.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Have a good one.